I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There. This is a show where we explore big questions through intimate stories in the great outdoors. Before we get started today, I wanted to let you know about an opportunity that's coming up. I'm looking for someone to help me with marketing the show. If you or someone you know has expertise in that area, and you're interested in an exciting part-time project, let me know. We'll have more details at the end of the show. When we spend time in the outdoors, it often leads to moments of self-reflection. Maybe it's the endorphins released by exercise, or simply being in the presence of wild natural beauty. The fresh air and space have a tendency to coax thoughts to the surface, even if we weren't necessarily aware they were lurking there. On today's episode, producer David Waters brings us a story about a connection with the outdoors that changed the life of an opera singer named Emily Stewart. Emily lives in New Haven, Connecticut, and her story is about an experience that enabled her to escape a career she thought would make her happy and move towards a life that actually did.
I wanted to be on Broadway. That's what I wanted to do. I don't know that I ever realized I could sing. I just decided I didn't care enough to stop. No, that's not true. I wanted to do it. I love music and I love singing. When I was six, my sister and I went to see West Side Story when it came on tour, and we became unreasonably obsessed with it. But it was just the two of us singing West Side Story, so we had to act out all of the roles between the two of us. I started singing in choir in fifth grade, and I guess there was kind of a moment of realization around 14, 15 when I would go to these voice teachers to try to learn how to sing like a Broadway singer, and I always ended up singing arias for them. So I started focusing more on the classical side of things. I was probably 15 years old when I decided, you know, forget Broadway, I'm gonna be an opera singer instead. There's this woman from my hometown, from Huntsville, Alabama, who's an incredible opera singer. She sings at the Metropolitan, she sings all over the world. She's really incredible. She would give these recitals in this little church in my hometown. You very rarely have an opportunity to sit kind of that close to someone of that caliber and hear something that intimate. She opened her mouth and the sound just came out, and it was the first time I'd ever been moved to tears in like a happy way. I mean, it was unbelievable. It's a religious experience, you know, it's just something else, something transcendent. So my senior year of high school, I was giving these like senior recitals, like a solo recital. It was just me and about 45 minutes of music or something. And I was really worried about it. There's this one particular Handel aria that had like a high B flat in it, and I never really got it right in practice the whole time I was singing it. And then I was on stage and I sang the note and it just like flipped into like exactly the right spot and clicked and just like resonated. And like, the song itself is triumphant, right? So to like have this great triumph of like hitting this thing technically that you've never really been able to hit before, and then hearing your own voice coming back at you and not necessarily recognizing it and being like surprised by how good it sounded. There's kind of a time dilation aspect, a little bit like being stoned, because you're creating music and hearing it back at you. That kind of creates a weird sensation of listening to yourself. Yeah, it's like the passage of time isn't as important, and every kind of moment exists like you're perfectly kind of connected to things. I remember it being something that I really, really wanted in a way that I'd never really wanted anything before, or honestly since then. There was just this like visceral longing. And maybe that's partly because it seemed so unattainable. No one has that kind of feeling about being an accountant, not because they don't want to be an accountant, but because most people who set out to be accountants can be accountants. So you never have to worry that you're going to miss it. I think the way you have to worry when you're pursuing a career in music. So I was taking voice lessons. I was going to a special magnet school so I could take choir classes 3 hours a day instead of just like 1 hour a day like you would at other schools. And it kind of took off from there. Just practicing and traveling to take auditions. You fly around the country with your parents and you can always spot the kids who are there for music auditions because they're always wearing black and they always look incredibly nervous and they always have one parent with them. In a musical audition, there's this like 10-minute period that legitimately determines what happens with the rest of your life, and that's pretty terrifying when you're 17, I think. It didn't matter what your grades and test scores were when you were applying to a conservatory. All that matters is your audition and your audition tape. You go to a practice room where they have a piano or something and you warm up by yourself and try not to freak out too much, and you're shown into this room with a piano player that you've never met before. I took beta blockers for my auditions. A pill that will basically block your adrenaline response. So you still have nervous thoughts, but you don't become kind of physiologically nervous in the same way. So you don't get the racing heart and you don't get the kind of shortness of breath. I went to Indiana and started taking voice lessons and doing that whole thing. So in case this isn't clear, Indiana doesn't sound really fancy when you just tell people Indiana, but actually the Jacobs School of Music at Indiana is the number one voice program in the country. It's like pretty competitive and people are pretty insane there. That summer I had a kind of depressive episode. I think I had a lot of anxiety about starting this program and about doing a good job. I was pretty worried about that, and I was worried, so I have a twin, and my twin sister went to Louisiana State University, which was in, you know, exactly the opposite direction, so we go from being together every day to being 1,000 miles apart, which I think had its own kind of anxiety attached to it. So I went up to Indiana that summer after I was admitted to meet with some of the voice teachers and try to get into their studios. And I did end up getting into the studio of this guy, Pula Menos, who's kind of a big deal. And I remember that first semester, Pula Menos saying to me, like, "I don't know how you got into this school," which was like the shittiest thing ever. And I remember like actually wearing makeup to my voice lesson one time and my professor making some comment about like, "That's how you need to look all the time." And like, just like that kind of shit. The idea that other people do care what you do and you're doing it wrong. Like that was kind of the overwhelming feeling I had being a musician. And I kind of started to feel just like shitty about everything. People weren't very nice, and it was a pretty cutthroat atmosphere that I wasn't crazy about. And I don't think I personally had the confidence to cope with it. I think a lot of people did and came out really well, but I was not one of them. So then that summer, rather than staying in Bloomington and practicing the way a lot of people were, my friend from Alabama and I decided to drive to Alaska. We both read Into the Wild too many times. It's something we had been talking about for years, that that's what we were gonna do. And we actually set out with the intention of becoming wildland firefighters, like when the forest catches on fire and you send like firefighters out there to put it out. That's what we wanted to do. I actually took this online course in like the theory and got completely certified in it, and so did she. You have to pass like some certain physical tests to do it. And one of those is the pack test. And you have to walk 3 miles in 45 minutes with a 45-pound pack on your back. Before going to Alaska, I wanted to make sure I could actually do that. So my brother and I put cinder blocks and backpacks and walked around the neighborhood for 3 miles to check whether I could do it. And I could, I did it. But I had these horrible scabs on my back because I'd been walking around with a cinder block, scraping my love handles for like 3 miles. We were serious about it, actually. And when we got to Alaska, we went to the kind of forestry outpost where we took all the physical tests, and we even ran around the woods with like axes pretending to like fight fire in the woods. Like this actually happened. And as far as I know, I passed all of the requirements, and yet I never heard back from them. They spent a whole day kind of training and testing us and then never said anything about it. Anyway, so that was the plan, was to go to Alaska and be wildland firefighters. We drove out there from Alabama, which ended up being about a 10-day drive. I mean, we took our time. We hung out in Colorado for a few days. I turned 19 in the Yukon Territory in Canada and ultimately headed down to Homer, Alaska, which is where I spent the rest of the summer.
I think that's the 78th town.
It's the halibut fishing capital of the world, and it's incredible. It's beautiful. You've got glaciery mountain peaks kind of across the bay, and there's St. Augustine volcano is right there. This kind of typical conical volcano, like looks like a child's drawing of a volcano. And really lush grass, and there's this plant called lupin, I think, that's this beautiful purple flower. And then later in the summer you get fireweed, which only shows up for a short amount of time, but it's this bright kind of red, and mountain peaks. Yeah, I don't think I can overstate how beautiful it was. It's beyond exhilarating. We were staying on Mossy's seaside farm. It's this organic farm about 5 miles out of town. We set up a tent and stayed there for the next 2.5, almost 3 months. Instead of paying rent, I would like weed the raspberry patch to pay my way. I remember going for runs because my friend and I were training for this 10K that we ran in town. And you'd go for a run and you'd say like, oh yeah, you know, my ribs kind of hurt, like I'm tired. And then you just like look to the right and there's this mountain range. I remember that just kind of taking away any of the like pain associated with exertion. It was really like that incredible that it just completely absorbed you. And I remember Mossy, the woman who owned this farm, saying it was like food to her, that the view of the mountains was like food, that she had to have it and had to look at it. There was about a 3-week period after we arrived where we didn't have any money. So we would just like do anything we could to get free food. We were like digging through garbage cans. I remember finding this bag like half full of marshmallows and just being like so fucking excited. And they were all kind of like stuck together at that point because it'd gotten wet. And like, it was the best thing ever. But I think my lowest point was I put a can of tuna fish in a thing of ramen noodles with like mayonnaise and dandelions. And it seemed really great at the time. It seemed like the best food ever. I started working at the grocery store, the Safeway grocery store in town. And I started out as a cashier, but ultimately ended up kind of working in the bakery, putting frozen cookie dough on trays all day. Once I had that job, it was pretty amazing. Just go to work, like play with cookie dough, go outside. And you know, it's summer in Alaska, so the sun is out until like 2 or 3 a.m. every night. So even when I got off work at midnight, I would just like ride this bike back to the farm in the sunlight. It was amazing. And Mossy's farm was really cool because there were a lot of people like us there. You would get to meet all kinds of travelers that were coming to Mossy's and make friends with people. There was always a big fire in the fire pit every night where you'd sit around and talk to the new set of strangers. So it was pretty wonderful. They say like every time you access a memory, you actually change it a little bit. And I access this one a lot. So maybe it wasn't as wonderful as I remember it being, but I'm pretty sure it was incredible. I'm pretty sure. I remember not being afraid of people anymore, and I think that was a big part of being on this farm and meeting all these people. I started hitchhiking a little bit, and that didn't scare me, and I started just talking to strangers all the time, and that didn't scare me. While I was there, I felt like pretty socially freed, and that was kind of the biggest thing. Like, people were kind of gonna like you, you know, no matter what, and that was a good feeling, yeah. I was living across from this volcano and I went hiking on glaciers and just started actually thinking about like mountains and shit and how cool they are. I remember talking to this tour guide on this glacier hike about why the ice was blue and what happened, like the way it interacted with the light. And that was just like the best conversation I had all summer, was this conversation about why glacier ice is blue. And I realized that I hadn't gotten to think about that kind of stuff when I was a singer. I didn't really think about anything. But I think there's a kind of fundamental lack of curiosity in becoming a musician. You're not really thinking about the world. You're not really thinking about anything except how to like hone this particular technical skill that you have, and there's really no room for curiosity. So there's this museum in Homer, basically like a science museum about like the Earth and like the oceans in particular. And I went there once before work to like kill time and watch this documentary about scientists taking these boats out to this island to like tag foxes and like study the fox population. That sounds really stupid, but I just started like sobbing, like watching this, because the idea of being like a scientist on a boat, like out there tagging foxes and shit, it just looked like so much more amazing than the life that I felt like I was going back to. Yeah, I think that was kind of the moment, was this museum and seeing this video. That was the point when I like really kind of admitted to myself that I didn't want to go back to doing music at all, and that I wanted to be outside. Yeah. I'd never taken a geology class. I remember calling up my mom on this payphone in the library and saying, like, I think I'm gonna change to a geology major. And she's like, why don't you just like take some geology classes and like stay in the music school? But that was not an option. So I wrote to my advisor and changed officially to a major in geological sciences, even though I'd never taken a geology class. A lot of people were really discouraging me. Most people were not happy with my decision to like change so abruptly, especially to a major that I didn't know anything about. I don't know if you've ever like dated someone and you're like trying so hard to convince yourself that you're into it. So you like talk them up all the time and you're like, so-and-so is great. Like, we're perfect for each other. Like, I love it when he does this. And then like when you finally break up with that person, everyone is shocked because all you've ever done is like talk this person up. It was kind of like that. Like, I felt like I'd talked up singing so much and talked up how much I loved it. You know, I think I'd had these questions about it for more than a year, but when I finally actually said something, everyone was kind of like, whoa, you never let on even a little bit that you had any kind of doubts about this. I hadn't told my accompanist, Alexandre, that I wasn't a music major anymore, and he called me up one day and was like, hey, like, are we gonna be able to work together this year? And I was like, oh, like, yeah, I'm not actually in the music school anymore. Like, I'm leaving. And he was, like, crying on the phone. He was really upset, actually. He was like, no, like, why are you doing this? And I felt awful. I felt really terrible. And that was kind of, like, the normal response. Like, most people were pretty horrified. So I flew from Alaska to South Carolina to go to this reunion with my dad's side of the family. And my grandpa likes to read poetry at the dinner table. He likes to like stand up and read this poem and then ask people to discuss it afterwards. So he read this poem about like music, and I found it devastating. And you know, we were all talking about the poem and what it means and all this kind of stuff. And I remember saying like, I think the one thing we're all forgetting is how important it is to listen to music, not just to make it. Like, I was trying to convince myself that was true. I think I started crying immediately after that. Yeah, there are definitely times I regretted it, but I knew I couldn't go back to being a musician. That was not an option. So I think maybe the undertow that's been running through this story is that I was raised an atheist, and I've always been an atheist, and so you kind of have to find meaning in other things, and for a while I think music was that kind of transcendent aspect of life. But it's only recently that I've started thinking of geology as actually having some spiritual aspect to it. It allows for like a... the view of the universe isn't so like human-centric. You know, you get to think about things on millions and billion-year timescales, and that's really fun. So I guess I've been a geologist now for 6 years. 6 years now that I've been doing this, and I've gotten to do some really cool stuff. I just finished up my master's degree. I did something pretty geochemistry heavy, trying to figure out how old particular microstructures in rocks are. Last summer, I went to Spain and like hiked around in the mountains and picked up rocks. This weekend, I went to this field conference where I was just tromping around Connecticut in the woods looking at rocks and talking to people about them. I've traveled to Newfoundland, all over New England, Spain, California. Yeah, looking at things and thinking about things. And it's been really great. It's been really great so far. If there's anything that I learned in all of this, it's that people just kind of do something and that maybe you're never actually doing the right thing. So yeah, I'm really enjoying what I'm doing, but I think I don't have the kind of angst associated with like doing the exact right thing anymore. I'm just kind of enjoying things, and maybe I could be happy doing a ton of other stuff, but I'm happy doing this, so why worry about it too much?
This piece was reported and produced by David Waters. He's a journalist and radio producer based in London. You can find him on Twitter at Dave Waters. That's D-A-V Waters. And if you'd like to hear more of his work, just go to rawcast.org. That's rawcast.org. We'll have a link to that on our website as well. So at the beginning of the show, I mentioned that I'm looking for some help. So far, this podcast has been very much a labor of love, but I have big goals and dreams for out there. And in order to achieve those and take the show to the next level, I need to reach a larger audience, and I need to start bringing in substantial revenue. And to make that happen, I need brain power. This is where you come in. I'm looking for a marketing/business person to join me. So, if you or someone you know has experience in marketing or in finding funding for projects like this, and you'd be interested in a fun side project, let me know. You'd be helping shape the future of a young, award-winning media company, and you'd be playing an important part in promoting quality journalism, the kind of journalism that makes a difference in people's lives. I unfortunately can't pay you, at least not yet. But I can promise to be a fun, enthusiastic colleague and to support you in any way I can. My email is willow@outthereshow.com, or you can contact me through our website. Either way, I look forward to hearing from you and finding a great partner to work with as we take this show to the next level. Thank you to a bunch of listeners who have made contributions to Out There. Daniel Tadman is a listener in New York City, and he wrote to say, quote, "As someone who lives in the city and manages to get out there much less than he would have liked, I can honestly say your podcast is a much-needed breath of fresh air for me." So thank you, Daniel, for your donation to the show. Brian Stokes also made a donation. He was one of the editors of my college newspaper, the Kenyon Collegian, which is where I got my start in journalism. We also had a donation from Shantae Salabert. She's a fellow writer and has a book coming out about the Pacific Crest Trail. Other listeners who made contributions are Eric Wolkamp, Meg Mobley, Chicory Bechtel, Amanda Lopez, Rebecca Sweet, Christopher White, and Deb and Vince Garcia. And finally, we have a donation from Taryn Hartman. She's a classmate of mine from grad school. She's a journalist in New York City. She wrote to me and said, quote, "I had just paid $99 for more legroom on a flight when I heard your special episode on Tuesday, and I thought to myself, if I can spend that much money on myself, I can surely spend it on one of my friends who's asking for only $10 at a time." If you're enjoying Out There and you're in a financial position to make a contribution of your own, I hope you'll join Taryn and the other listeners in supporting the show. And if you're thinking you don't have the money to make a real difference, I want you to rethink that. Our average listener donation last month was just $22. But with enough gifts that size, it can make a huge difference to a small show like this. So if you'd like to make a contribution of your own, just go to outthereshow.com and click support. For a donation of $50 or more, we'd be happy to send you an Out There t-shirt as a thank you gift. This episode was produced by David Waters and me, Willow Belden. Our theme music was written by Jared Arnold. Have a beautiful day. Be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.